Good morning, good morning, good morning. It is your girl, Sharifa Hardy, host of the Roundtable Talk Show. I am bringing to you yet another amazing show for you today. Now, I'm going to go ahead and introduce the guests because that's what I do. That's my part. That's my role. That's my job. But I need a little assistance from my team. I need you to go out and be an evangelist for the Roundtable Talk Show. And we all know what that means. That means we need to find the person in your house that typically doesn't get this information. They don't want to learn about business. They don't care about how to make money. They are not interested in being successful. I need you to go rope them in, grab them, drag them to the computer, because this is the information that we need. And friends, do not let friends miss out on the Roundtable Talk Show. So if you let your friends miss out on this information, I don't know. I don't even know what to say about that. It is so important that we share this message. So while you're doing your part, I'm going to go ahead and do my part, which is to introduce our first guest. Now, our first guest, I just love her to death. She is so amazing. One of the people that has always supported me when I go out and speak, she shows up and her spirit is just so amazing. One of the things that I just really love about her is she is someone who exemplifies the never give up spirit. Her story is amazing. I'm going to go ahead and introduce Ms. Dana Nickerson, who is a two-time cancer champion. She is also a therapist, and we're going to talk about the university, her self-help movement. Good morning, Dana. How are you? Dana, got that mute on, Dana.
First things first, unmute. Good morning, everyone. It's so great to be here this morning. Thank you for that welcome, Sharifa. Thanks for having me.
You are so welcome. You know you're amazing. I love your energy. I love everything about you. And one of the things that I talk about on the show is people send me bios, they pitch resumes, and I can get very bored, like, easily. I don't know if y'all could tell yet. My attention span is like,
frozen.
And that happens.
It's that hotel bandwidth. It's a great pose, though.
I know. And it extended her attention span a tad, huh?
It's a superwoman pose.
Right.
We used to run technical presentations for businesses, and we'd run them and they'd run perfectly. And I'd tell my team, don't even breathe in here. Everybody leave, we'll just lock the door. The client would come in, we'd push the button and it wouldn't work. So I think that's probably what
happened.
Yeah. I got a notice that came up and said, I'm the host now. Since the site has just told me I'm the host, my advice to everybody listening is buy lots of product from everyone.
All right.
All right, I'm done now.
And the host has spoken.
And that's it. It's really interesting you're a cancer survivor?
Yes, I am. I'm a two-time cancer survivor. Wow. And a whole host of things that I bring experience to the table in what I created for millennials is B University. And B University is a platform for self-improvement and self-awareness for the millennial generation. It is my purpose to equip our future leaders with skills they need. And in this time of stress and, you know, uncertainty, the millennials were kind of dropped off into the world to fend for themselves in several ways. And a lot of them came out of high school around 2008 in the middle of the crash, the real estate crash.
Yeah.
And so the life that we prepared them for is not the life that they're able to live. And I see that there's gaps. And as a mom, I, as a mom of three millennial women, I also had the experience of training in the healthcare system, the millennials. And I got really acquainted with their needs, really based off of my life. And my mom died when I was 13 years old to cancer. And then of course I was suffered through the same disease twice. And what I see in millennials is that they feel quite alone and they feel like they're left without guidance. And whether that is true or not, the perception is what you feel like it is. And what I see is that they have a voice, and it's not so much with the millennials that they need to be told what to do. They need to be told how to do what they want to do. And so I created B University as a place for them to be seen, heard, and gotten. And then I'm creating a team, and I'm here to express that there's room. If your expertise is something that you want to share with the millennial generation, whether it's coaching or job skills or especially self-awareness and the people skills, the soft skills, the things that we call emotional intelligence, we want the people who are going to take care of us equipped to the fullest. And unlike we've ever really done it, with the face of college changing, campuses aren't offering programs now that we used to take on when we were, you know, fraternities and sororities and all of those support groups that we had aren't there for them. And so I'd really like to reach out to other professionals and build this team where we can give back and give back in a powerful way to empower the millennials to live the life of their dreams. That's what
I'm saying. Wow. That is impressive. I am so impressed. Now, one of the things that stood out for me in your bio is when you talk about the university. And I was just kind of curious, do you feel like the university, the name itself kind of gets lost? You know what I mean? Because people may not recognize that it's not just a university, you know, it's the university. So were you concerned about it not being specific enough?
I am still, you know, working with the outreach of the product, and the B University came up in an interesting way. My focus was on changing our way of being, that we slip out of doing so much and become people of standard in our word, and standing in our word create a way of being. And so initially my message was be you, just the letters and the hashtag be you. And I was sharing that with someone, and it was just in conversation that he said, I really see an opportunity that you could round that out and make it universal, or how about university? And mm-hmm. So it will be in strategic marketing that we get the message that you're not signing up for a school, or I'm not offering courses that you could transfer to somewhere else, but you signing up for the University of creating your way of being, that you can be powerful in the world according to you and not what I tell you you should do.
I like that. I like being university, the university of being. Okay. I just want to be, you know what I mean? And I like that because one of the things that I like to talk about is the whole aspect of the great I am, you know what I mean? And I am what I say I am, right? So if I am this type of person, who am I being? Who am I showing up in the world? So I love the entire idea. As always, Dana, I love speaking with you. We're going to come back to you and discuss more about your journey in B University. But I want to go ahead and introduce my next guest. And ever since I met this man, certain people, I don't even remember. I'm going to be honest. Like, they come on, they send me their pitches, and I'm like, you're so wonderful. And they show up, and I'm like, I have no idea who they are. But ever since because I spoke to him on the email, and then I spoke to him on the chat, and then we had technical difficulties, but he didn't give up. He was like, I have a message. I'm going to tell my story. And when I met him, I was like, oh, okay, this is going to be fun. This is going to be interesting. I have a young man on the show who's going to talk to us about Tales from the Day. And we're going to specifically talk about some of his interesting journeys and his book. I'd love to welcome Mr. Wayne McFarland. Good morning, young man. How are you?
Good morning. What an introduction. If I wasn't happily married, I'd probably propose at this very moment. Thank you.
Now your wife is going to be mad at me. Don't get me in trouble.
There you go. I really appreciate the invite to come on here. When I first saw what you were doing, I thought, you know, I've written this book, there comes the shameless plug, right? Tales from the Day. But really my background is as a serial entrepreneur. And a couple of years ago, my wife and I had started a software company, which we had for some years. And I will tell you guys that my wife is the one with the PhD from Caltech, my plane does not fly up there. So the first thing I want to tell any guys in your audience is that, yes, it is possible to marry above your station. I'm living proof that it can be done. And so a couple of years ago, we sold the business, and I've always loved to read. So I started reading a lot of memoirs and autobiographies and stuff. And I have to tell you guys, I just stopped after about 20 and I said, these really suck. Mm-hmm. I mean, that most people who write about their past and developing this and that, it tends to be very self-serving. Mm-hmm. I gazed at the mountains and I looked up and I said, this is my destiny. Mm-hmm. Doesn't really happen like that. How, in my view, how it happens is that if you're out there doing things like you guys are all doing stuff, you stumble into things. And then it comes down to the fact, do you have the personality and mindset to take advantage of it? And usually if you do, you end up in a place you never anticipated. Like some of the chapters of my book about, losing 10 grand at the Hollywood sign or pitching a loan shark and things like this.
You pitched a loan shark?
Yeah. Well, we needed some money for a radio station I was working with, and which was quite an experience, I have to say.
No, Wayne. Don't try to go on with that story. I need to know about how you pitched a loan. How you even find loan sharks these days?
Well, this goes back a bit.
Because I need one.
No, you don't. You don't. Trust me, you don't need one. And a friend of mine called me one day, and he'd bought a little radio station in Las Vegas. Should have been a warning, right?
Mm-hmm. And that Las Vegas.
Yeah, and that was before the time that the IRS figured out what these folks were all doing. And in the day of local radio, which is why I love what you're doing here so much, is that, you know, it was really an entrepreneurial event. And people who owned little radio stations usually could never sell all their advertising. So they'd trade things. They'd go to a car person and say, I need a car, it's $5,000. Here's $5,000 worth of advertising, you know, which they couldn't sell anyway, right? It was a thing of beauty. So my friend calls me up and he says, listen, I got this great idea. I bought this little radio station in Las Vegas and it just covered Las Vegas in the daytime. It was very small. And they said, what we're going to do, and you're going to help me, is we're not going to sell advertising for money. We're going to do 100% trade. Oh, and then we'll sell the trade. Brilliant, right? And I thought, but he offered me a little money to come in. So I went in and we did live like kings. I mean, kings and queens, we traded everything, you know, shows and meals, and it was great. And then one day he calls me in his office and he says, we're out of money. Big surprise, right? We weren't selling for money, so we're broke now. And he said, I have a solution. We are going to go pitch Big Jim at Big Jim's loan show, or Big Jim's bail bonds, for a year advertising contract, cash in front. He's rich. Mm-hmm. Now, I was new to Las Vegas, but even I knew, this was during the mob days, that this guy was the biggest loan shark in Las Vegas. And I said, you know, I don't know if that's such a great idea. And he said, no, it'll be fine. I even made a sample commercial. Mm-hmm. So he plays me this commercial. And I got to tell you guys, it sounded great. Mm-hmm. There was this disc jockey voice and music in the background. And the ad pitched listeners that if they got in trouble with the law, to call Big Jim and he'd spring them out of jail. Mm-hmm. So I thought, that sounds pretty good. Okay, we'll give it a shot. So we go down to Big Jim's office. And in the conference room, there's Big Jim and his son, Little Jim, who is reputed to be as mean as a rattlesnake. Mm-hmm. So Little Jim starts out and he says, I don't even know why we're here. We're not going to spend any money. And my friend says, no, I even did a commercial for you. And the kid says, we don't want to hear any stupid commercial. And Big Jim holds up his hand like the Godfather and says, play it. So my friend pushes the button. And instead of the commercial he played for me, out comes my friend's voice, backed by music, organ music in a minor key. And the dialogue read like this. Have you killed your wife? If you have money in the bank here at Big Jim's Bail Bonds, we don't care. Have you hit your mom with an axe? If you have equity in real estate here at Big Jim's Bail Bonds, we don't care. I'm looking at my friend like he's lost his mind. The kid comes popping out of his chair. His eyes were actually bulging. I never seen anybody's eyes bulge. And I don't know what he was going to do, but he stopped when he saw that his father was laughing so hard. I thought he was going to have a heart attack. So Big Jim calms down and he says, oh, that was great. Really stupid, but great. He said, okay, I'll give you your deal. But he said, I have two conditions. One is you give me that commercial, and it better be the only copy. And the second is you never put anything on the air unless I've approved it. My friend's fumbling for his pen. He says, yeah, no problem. And we got it. Cash in front, cash on the barrel head. And I thought that Big Jim wanted that commercial to destroy it. Mm-hmm. But I heard later that he played it at every single party he ever attended, right up until he went to jail.
Wow. So Big Jim is no longer free, because I was about to find Big Jim and Little Jim in Las Vegas. I'm like, Big Jim, Little Jim is where the money is.
You're going to have to seek out the Gray Bar Hotel, because that's where he spends his time these days.
The Gray Bar Hotel in Las Vegas.
That's it.
Can I drop your name? I'll be like, look, Wayne said.
No, whatever you do, don't drop my name. Thank you. I got troubles enough. So the other thing
that I wanted to talk about, because I didn't even expect that story. That was interesting. The other one I read is about your wife. And you had a famous celebrity who was trying to break up your marriage.
Yeah, it was, and you know, that was Johnny Cash. He's gone now.
Johnny Cash.
Yeah, we were doing some work at the country music show, which at the time was in Tulsa. And we were doing some special effects to start the show, which did not go well, believe me. So I went to the backstage bar to drown my sorrows. And I had... Gloria was getting her doctorate at the time, so she didn't know anything about show business or entertainment or anything. So, but I flew her in after lying to her about the beauties of Tulsa. And believe me, the lies were spectacular. So she was backstage and said, nah, you go have a beer and I'll stay here and watch the show. So I come out a few minutes later and here's this huge crowd gathered around, must have been 100 people. And they're standing in a circle around this big guy all dressed in black. And my wife, and I'm looking at this going, what is this now, right? And she's shaking her head and laughing about something. And finally, everybody wandered away. And I went over to her and I said, what did he say to you? And she said, oh, just a bunch of nonsense. And I've never been able to pry out of her what he said to her. I swear on my deathbed, she's going to come in and say, now I'll tell you what he said. But it's probably good I didn't know, right? So then I looked at her and I said, do you know who that was? And she said, no, I don't know who that was. Who was that? And I swear to you, she was just as sincere as she could be. I said, that was Johnny Cash. And she said, who's Johnny Cash? So as it turns out, I apparently was never in any danger anyway. So, but that was
this it. Is hilarious. I have to pick up a copy of the book. How long have you been married, Wayne?
Oh, we probably 40 years now.
I could tell you had one of those 30, 40 year marriages, because yeah. You got all these stories and happening. I can't wait to read more. Now, when we come back to you, I want to go ahead and introduce our next guest. And I know she's a creative, so she probably has some pretty wild stories of her own, but she's a director, a writer, a CEO. She runs her own business, and she's been running her own business probably for about, I'll say about 3 years, since she was 18 years old. She can't be more than 21, 22 now, but we're going to hear her incredible story. Please welcome Miss Jahala Jones. Good morning, Jahala.
Hello, good morning.
You like that introduction?
I'm 21, thanks. That's nice. Yeah, so I've been doing business for 12 years, actually. Mm-hmm. I'm 29.
Oh, girl.
So yeah, what questions do you have for me?
I want to hear about you. First of all, we were listening to Wayne, and he was talking about all these incredible stories, and you're a writer. What did you think of what Wayne shared with us?
I was thinking about ideas and characters. I'm like, what an interesting character, loan sharks. I haven't thought about that. I'm always trying to I guess people watch and just like pay attention to what other people are like talking about, since I can't experience everything. Mm-hmm. So, you know, that was really interesting. I switched Wayne's place with his friend. I'm like, it wasn't his friend. It was him, but he doesn't want to tell anyone. Storyline in my head. Like, he knows the words too well. It was.
What do you like to write about?
I'm really into sci-fi stuff. Sci-fi.
I kind of thought so by the background. Like, I made certain assumptions. I was like, she's a kind of sci-fi, kind of new, kind of, yes.
I do. I like sci-fi. Like, I like writing, like, usually these days I've been writing scripts about, like, that have, like, video games involved or something. So I'm just, like, really into, like, the whole nerdy side of, it's either nerdy or corny. One of those I'm probably going to be writing about. So,
I don't think any of that is corny at all. It's interesting that you say nerdy, because when people ask me to describe myself, I'm like, well, I'm basically a nerd. Like, I'm more nerdy than anything else. I love gadgets. I love technology. Like, those are the things I get excited about. People are like, you know, the new purse came out. Everybody has Michael Kors. I'm like, yeah, but what's on the App Store? Like, that's more of my flow.
Exactly. No purses over here. I'm too busy. I'm much more into tech. So.
Yes, but you're the CEO. You're the CEO of your own company at 29. Congratulations. So tell us about what made you get into business.
I would say my upbringing. My parents, especially my dad, were really on, like, you got to start your own business. Like, you want to live your own life with your own rules. Things like that. So I started my first business at 18, actually. And then I've never worked for anyone. I've always owned my own business. I've had so many different businesses. I'm like, at 29, it's like my 11th company. So I've gotten a lot better at it.
No, but everybody does. You know, when I was laid off 8 times, I would have never, ever in my wildest dreams imagined that I would be a talk show host. So it's like you kind of go through the journey. Now, you talk about your father, and one of the things that I talk about is entrepreneurs tend to come from, like, entrepreneurial families. So is your father, your parents, your family entrepreneurs?
All of them. There's 9 of us all together.
9 siblings?
No, there's 7. There's 7 siblings and then my parents.
So okay.
Everybody, entrepreneurial spirit. I actually help run our family business that I don't, my sisters hate when I say this, but I helped start it with my mom a few years ago. So my mom runs the company, because once that kept going, we have quite a few employees over there. I like went into my like passion project, like, this is what I want to do. So I have my production company and then my mask company, which is new, you guys. COVID, it's pretty new.
Let's talk about Puff Mask and Accessories.
So Puff, I can actually have, I'm like sitting at my desk. Here's one of my products. Wait, can you see it without the background? I can't. Maybe because it's like.
Probably because it's moving. Like, if you, the camera was set up. But we saw it. Like, yeah.
I'm like, I don't know. But yeah, so I have quite a few products. Right now I'm working on a national distribution deal. So that's pretty exciting. Once everything is done and complete, then I'll tell the world, like, oh my gosh, this is what happened. But I would say this was probably one of the most challenging businesses that I've started, because I created a product to go straight into stores instead of being sold to like regular consumers. It was like the B2B product and then it goes to consumers. So it just made it really challenging, and I had no idea what I was in for then.
Mm-hmm. What did you learn? What did you learn?
I learned that, big business is more adaptable than I realized. Like, I thought they kind of moved slower, or maybe they're not. I just learned that everybody, when you think you have an idea, like just yourself, even if it's like unique or however the way that you want to get into it is, everybody has the same idea. It's literally like, when they say rat race, they mean it on every level of business so far that I'm like, okay, this is not simple at all. I didn't expect it to be, but I just didn't think it would be so, I thought like companies would be really concerned with quality and they weren't. And then I was. So it kind of like put me behind, because it's like, I'm obsessed with quality and like things being good and this and that. But they, a lot of businesses didn't care. You'd be surprised. Just take anything. So I feel like I learned to, I guess, what do they call it? The 80-20 rule? Is it 60-40 rule?
I think you're talking about the 80-20 rule.
Yeah.
I think I know what you're talking about.
Yeah. I learned that is probably a 60-40. Mm-hmm. It's more of a 60% than the 80% that matters. So.
But you know what? The thing about it, one of the things I like about you is that I see this all the time, and this is so interesting to me, is you're having conversations with distributors, because that's what I took out of what you just said. And the majority of the people, that is their wish, their goal. Like, I wish I even knew how to get on the phone or get introduced or get that meeting with a distributor. And then we have people like yourself, like, well, you know, I just picked up the phone and I called Bob and I was like, Bob, I got a mask for you. And you know what I mean? Like, that's the kind of energy that I'm getting, that a lot of things are moving, are easier for you because you're willing to just kind of, I feel, just do it. Where other people are like, well, I don't know how to do that. Does that make sense?
Right. It definitely sets you up for a lot. If you are not good with rejection, it's something mm-hmm. that you need to get good at, because getting rejected from like a big box store, like Albertsons told me no twice. Mm-hmm. Albertsons owns Myers, I'm pretty sure, which is like, they have like those stores in Ohio. And getting told no by them, I was just like really down for like a whole day. I'm like, I really wanted to be there. I'm just sad. And I feel like that type of rejection on that level will make a lot of people stop. But I'm going to tell you, keep going. There's no matter how big you think something is or an organization is, there's always another one.
Yes, there's always another one, or there's another way. And you said you got turned down from Albertsons twice. And I'm like, I might have stopped after the first time, you know. But that's one of the things. One of the interesting stories that I love reading is, I watched Byron Allen's interview on The Breakfast Club. And I don't know if any of you have seen it or not, but if not, I Google Byron Allen, The Breakfast Club. And if you don't know who Byron Allen is, very successful multi-billionaire, owns lots of television stations, owns The Griot. If you ever read The Griot, that's all Byron Allen. But he was on The Breakfast Club, and Charlamagne asked him, you know, but how did you get your start? How did you get your first station? And he was like, oh, it's a lot of work. And Charlamagne said, no, I need to know, like, specifically, you know, we don't want this high level story. And finally he says, you know what, if I would say anything, I would say I just kept going. Like, he said he literally called stations 200, 300 times. People who had already told him no 75 times prior, he would just keep calling. He said his home went into foreclosure, I think he said some 47 times or 37 times, but by that time he understood the process. Like, once I get here, then I have 40 days. And then once I get to that 40 days, you know, so he understood how long he could maneuver. And now he's one of the most successful people there is. So I admire when you say, if you have a fear of rejection, get over it. Jahela, I'm going to come back to you, but I want to go ahead and introduce our next guest. I love amazing people. I just love talking to people. I love learning. This is how I grow my business and my life. But I want to go ahead and introduce Miss Raquel Eatman, Rising Media. She's a communications leader. She's an author, and she's the founder of Women of Power Conference. Good morning, Raquel. How are you?
Good morning. I'm great. How are you?
I'm excited to be here. I'm excited to have you. Is that a book in the background?
I do have books in the background in front of me. They're all over me. love writing, love telling stories, just actually sitting here listening to some of the storytelling. And before I go into the book and the history behind the book, Sharifa, I just have to say thank you so much for having this platform. It's just fantastic to share ideas and stories and connections. So thank you so much for taking the time to not only build it, but to be present with it. So thank you.
You are so welcome. I appreciate you saying that. I mean, it is an honor and it is a privilege. And I tell people quite honestly, sometimes I do this for selfish reasons because I have made so many strides in my business. I'm an author getting my book out there because I can ask the people who know. You're a best-selling author. Who else to ask? If I say, you know what, Raquel, I just published my book. I want to get it out there. What works for you? So you have that information that you can give to me. But before we, again, go into the book, I wanted to ask you mentioned stories. What do you think of Wayne? And what okay, look, we're gonna see who agrees with Jahala. Was that really Wayne? Did Wayne make that video?
That's the problem working with perceptive people. You know, it drives me crazy.
Well, that's something that's great about storytellers is that you don't know if they're the actual culprit or if they are truly telling, you know, the truth of like, I'm going to just put this whole story on somebody else. But that's pretty much how creative spirits, you know, do it. And, you know, I grew up, I'm an only child, but we had people coming through the house all the time. And every time we'd have folks coming over and cousins, I would just make up stories and they would believe these stories. And so one of my mother's, friends told her one day, I must have been about 8 or 9, and she said, your daughter's gonna have some problems. She's got some issues. Like, she's talking to herself and telling all these stories, and I believed everything she said, and she lied. So my mom said, keep telling the stories, it's working. So I'm happy to be here.
I want to go back to that a little bit. I love gold. Like, to me, this is gold. And sometimes one of the things I notice with guests is they give us gold and they don't even realize it's gold. But other people watching are like, that's very important. You could have, and your mother could have, taken that in so many different directions. Like, the worst case, you would have had therapy sessions from now until you're 40 because you have these tendencies, right? But what's interesting to me is I was the same way. I was that kid who always created stories. One of the things that I learned about my stories is that I like to over-exaggerate, right? And the reason I do that is because if I make up a story and I'm like, there are 3 million people standing outside, you can't tell me you believe that. Like, I try to expand it so big that you can't possibly think that this is for real.
Right. Yeah, I grew up, I was raised by 3 women, my mother, grandmother, and great-grandmother. So there was all of this material, you know, from 3 generations. And this was before, you know, cell phones and your attention span is shorter. So I absorbed what these women were saying and doing. And like, I'd walk behind my great-grandmother and mimic how she would, you know, walk or wobble depending on which age she was at the time. I just had, you know, uncles coming through, and before they took their dates out for the weekend, they played Earth, Wind, and Fire and the Isley Brothers. I would watch them dance. This is when people danced in living rooms, right? So I would just sit there as a kid, like, oh, so this is what it's like to be a grown-up. And I would start to mimic and get the inflections of their voices. And you're an only child. You don't have cell phones at the time. We weren't allowed to have televisions in our bedrooms or even a telephone in the bedroom. So you're around people, and they left an impression on me. So that's how it started. And I still do it. My husband will hear me talking to myself and I'll also answer myself. And he's like, oh, okay. It's an only child thing. Cause he's the youngest of 7. He never gets
Jahala. She got 7 over here. I mean, she can't even understand that nobody to talk to.
Right. Nobody to talk to. So you talk to yourself and you answer yourself. But it was a wonderful setup to be a creative source. And, you know, I was the kid writing letters to God and hanging them out on the clothespin, and I or the clothesline with clothespins, and I'd wake up the next morning, the letter was gone, and I knew he was answering prayers because my grandmother said he would. And as I got older, my mother said, oh, I was taking those letters off because I wanted you to so believe that he was in fact answering you. So you grow up, and 10 years, you're thinking, I have a special relationship with God. He is answering my notes. He's taking the notes. And, you know, you find out parents have a lot to do with, you know, all of this stuff as we get older. And if you all hear some construction going on, I'm having some work done on the home.
We can't hear
just
anything.
Ignore it. I'll talk louder.
We can't hear anything. Good. You sound wonderful. You sound great. Don't even worry about talking louder. If you hear a little knocking, that's okay. That means you're renovating, you're hooking things up, and you're handling your business. And that's all we expect from our guests. Now, I wanted to read a comment. They're commenting today. Amy Trout Hughes says, I love that. This is what it's like to be a grown-up. For me, being a grown-up lady meant carrying a beautiful paper shopping bag from Strawbridge and Clothiers in downtown Philadelphia while walking with my grandma and aunties. So she understands it. And so what I get from what you're saying, and I thank you for all the comments and the hearts and the loves. We appreciate your support. If you have questions or comments of our guests, please feel free to ask. But I'm hearing the whole Tyler Perry story. When you speak, that's who I hear. I hear Tyler Perry. I don't know if you're a fan or not, but that's really what his start was. I'm sorry.
Oh, yes, absolutely. I'm a huge fan of Tyler Perry. Oh my goodness, what a story! What an amazing life.
But that's where Medea came from.
The opportunity to work with him in a stage.
Oh, congratulations! Wow. Well, yes, when you think exactly. of Medea, it's the same story. It was his family, his aunts, that he was channeling, basically his family.
Right, right, absolutely. And, you know, I grew up loving to write stories and things of that nature. But my career would go a very different way. I actually went into television news broadcasting because I love to write stories. I love to interview people. However, once I got into the business, as we know, news over the years has changed so much. There was so much salaciousness that I thought, I don't know if I'm really contributing to the world in the way that I want. So I stayed in it a decade, yet, you know, was successful in it and decided to leave. And I thought, now I am going to focus more on writing, crafting stories, writing books, things of that nature. And a recession happened. Mm-hmm. And knocked me nearly off my feet. I had everything, you know, sort of downsized or taken away. And a lot of people can identify with this story. So I decided out of that, I got to figure out how to make money because I like to eat. So mm-hmm. let's figure this out.
I say
out.
The same thing. That's so funny. I tell right. people, not only do I like to eat, but I like to eat well. You know what I mean? I remember I had this client one time who I went to his office. And remember, I live in LA, right? So I was doing some work and I brought him the invoice to his office on Wilshire. And I gave him the invoice. And you know, he tells me, he goes, Sharifa, you're expensive. I'm like, and you in the high rise, right? Why you get to eat lobster and I got to eat tuna? Just pay my invoice so I can get, you know what I mean? Like, this is what I do. Raquel, I want to talk about, before I go too far, because we've been talking today, and I don't want to run out of time. I want to talk about the Women of Power Conference. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Absolutely. So I started the Women of Power Conference. It's actually singular, but everybody says Women of Power.
You can
find it at VWOPC. No problem. VWOPC.com. I started that conference out of the recession. And that's a point I want to make right now as people are going through challenging times. This is when you have an opportunity to recreate who you are. And that's when I started this conversation. I wanted to find a platform for women to be transparent and talk about their challenges. Because so often it's easy to talk about success and show up in a $3,500 suit, like I've always had it this way. Well, you've had to go through some stuff to get there. So I invited executive women to come in and teach high potential women We didn't have it for 2020 due to the pandemic, and it looks like for 2021 it may go virtual. I'm just taking a seat back, seeing what happens. But just FYI, folks, it started with over 20 attendees. They paid about $12 to attend a half-day seminar. It's grown to over, you know, at times we've had over 500 attend, you know, ticket prices, 250 and up. I mean, it's growth. It's slow growth. And people think, you know, success happens overnight. It does not. That's not true. People think you have to sacrifice a lot for success. I don't believe in that. I think the only thing you have to sacrifice is your comfort zone, which is a great thing to sacrifice, right? Because who needs to stay comfortable all the time? But I'm really shocked at how this conference has taken over and brought in some of the sponsors I've partnered with, like KeyBank and Vitamix and Sherwin-Williams. Really large companies have seen the value. So, and this was a part of it. This was the book, Beyond Enough, How to Lead with Your Whole Self. It's not a storytelling book at all, but it's more about helping, namely, women to take more risk. I'm a big risk taker. I'm also a rejection survivor. I think I've survived over 2,000 of them. Oh, wow. So anything that I can do to help women take that conversation and move forward in their lives, either in business or the corporate world, I'm a champion for that.
Well, thank you. We definitely appreciate that. I want to go over to Dana real quick. So you were, when Raquel was speaking, I just saw you nodding, glowing, clapping your hands, and you were like, yes, supportive. When you hear her speaking, and Jahala was talking about the fear of rejection, what are your thoughts?
Well, as I branch out into entrepreneurship that I've crafted in such a way that I have to put myself out there, that's really feeding a need for me. And I had created for myself to hurry up and hear my no's, get to the rejections, hurry up and get to those so I can, you know, ready myself or, you know, establish myself for the long haul. And I really feel that we don't close shop early just because the finances aren't there, but that largely people's ideas, these awesome ideas, we fold on them too quickly because we're afraid of that no, and we don't get no ready or you know. And another part of what Raquel was saying is the only child and the earth, wind, and fire and the making up stories. And I am so in touch with that. I was just recreated in all of that. And with Jahala's story, my mom is one of seven. And mm-hmm. I had the chance to look at their Facebook pages and just to see the phenomenality, I'm going to make up a word, that these phenomenal women doing big things. And I'm just really grateful to be a part of this. And I also see that there is so much commonality between us that if we learn to have strategic partnerships and collaborations, we can really help one another and support, and our word can multiply through others. So this platform, just like Raquel was saying, is just phenomenal. And I'm just really just soaking it all in.
Well, I appreciate that. And I appreciate you soaking it all in because you mentioned the fear of rejection, but you're one of those people. Wayne?
Yes, can I add something here?
Absolutely.
I'm keying off a couple things Raquel said. My experience in publishing my book, I have a publisher now, but for those who want to put a book out there, I found that when I started, there's a whole industry out there of hustlers and scam artists, and all they want to do is rip off people who have the urge to write a book. So I took all my experiences with scam artists and put it in a book called You're an Author, Don't Get Hustled. And Raquel, I'm sure you've been pitched by everybody under the sun about just give them a few hundred or a few thousand dollars and they'll make you a bestseller, right? I mean, there's just legions of scam artists out there. So in addition to Tales from the Day, I had that other one is specifically written for people who want to put a book out there and don't want to get hustled, because there's hundreds of people out there that make their living by scamming people who want to be creative. So and the only advice as a serial entrepreneur, I've loved listening to this stuff, that I ever give to people is, and I'm sure you've all been through it too, is, you know, to protect yourself. You like the story you climb up with the guy whose house went into foreclosure?
Yeah.
I always tell people, either incorporate yourself or become an LLC and never take personal money out of your corporate account. But the big thing is, there's stuff out there called errors and omissions insurance. And mm-hmm. it's very cheap. And when you go into business, what you got to realize that at some point, you're going to get sued. I mean, mm-hmm. if you're trying to win the lottery, you may have done nothing wrong.
Right.
In most cases, you don't. It's just somebody trying to greenmail you to get you to pay them off, not take you to court. Mm-hmm. And errors and omissions insurance is like, it's cheap, $30 a month maybe. Mm-hmm. And if somebody sues you, they have a whole team of lawyers that'll step in and fight it. And plus, depending on the policy you have, up to $1 million. If you it does go wrong for you or the team, they pay. You don't pay.
Oh, wow. I like that.
Yeah. So if you incorporate yourself or do an LLC, the law views a corporation or an LLC as a separate person. So you do business under that. And then if it goes wrong, I'm particularly interested in how many businesses that you've had, you know, before you came on your mask thing, or maybe there's others. But not everything works. In fact, most things don't work. Mm-hmm. And there's nothing people want more than somebody to blame, even right. when there's no one to blame, like the recession you're talking about, Raquel. And so I tell people, incorporate so nobody can come after your house or your possessions. Be careful how you do it, and then get E&O insurance. And then if somebody tries to take a run at you, you can just go have a beer and not worry about it.
I love that aspect. You should watch yesterday's show. We had the lady who founded her own tropical rum business. So all we talked about was alcohol. Yeah, that was a good show. They thought I was drinking a little too much at 8 o'clock in the morning, but that's a whole nother story. Raquel, Wayne mentioned, you know, being an author and how authors may be hustled. How did you feel stepping out as a new author in this unknown territory?
So this is my second book. The very first one, I cannot tell you how important it is to find a mentor. For every project you're trying to work on, find somebody who's already an expert in it, because it saves you time and it saves you money. So I consulted with someone who had self-published before. Mm-hmm. And he just said, hey, here's the steps, 1, 2, 3, and 4. I can direct you to it, you do the work. And I kept those notes because I knew I would self-publish again. So everything is published under my company, Rising Media. It is true, you have a lot of folks coming to you with unbelievable deals saying they're gonna save you time and they're gonna promote it and build a marketing plan. And I know a friend who did go that route, and, you know, $6,000-$7,000 in, she had a book that was falling apart at the binder, and oh, wow. It wasn't something comfortable promoting, you know, with her company. So I say, I love learning. I think it's smart for us to take the hard road, because then you know that you're going to get no's, you know, you're going to get there. The easy road isn't always the best road. So yes, I was fearful. Yes, I didn't know what I was doing, but I found someone who did, and I leaned on that person's experience. And the second time around, I followed the same notes and it worked like magic.
Now, one of the things that I want to talk about, because we often discuss the whole self-publishing aspect as opposed to traditional agent, right? And one of the things that I have seen is that agents want to say, okay, well, how large is your following in order to consider publishing you or representing you. And, you know, they want your following to be at certain numbers. And so I always ask the question, if you have the numbers, what is the need for the publisher? So you have or the agent rather. So you have so many people, you've earned that, you know, the following, why not just sell them the book? So what are your thoughts on self-publishing as opposed to the traditional route?
I don't know if that's directed toward me, but I've done both.
Mm-hmm.
And you hit it right square on the head. Any agent or publisher who comes to you and says, what's your following? They're looking for you to do the work that they're supposed to do. And they're going to take a 15% rake off. And so traditional publishers, there's a lot of them out there who are really good. Same thing with agents. But what I advise people to watch for is that now, in today's world, I mean, there's a few of the Goliaths like Simon & Schuster and others, but most publishers, just like most agents, specialize in certain areas. I mean, if you're writing, Raquel, books like you've written, you're a company or an agent that specializes in cookbooks is not going to take you on. So I tell people, if you want to go the traditional route, an agent, a publisher, there's a lot of legitimate ones out there. But what you got to do is spend a lot of time researching and finding agents and publishers who specialize in your area and then pitch them. Mm-hmm. And boy, you are so right. I mean, anybody, it's a hustle. If they
come
saying, we don't take on anybody who doesn't have 2,000 followers. Well, what do you need them for?
Right. Right. And I wish they said 2,000 followers. The numbers I've seen are like 500,000, 1,000,000 before they even want to have a conversation. Jahela, what have you seen in your experience as a writer? Jahela, did we lose Jahela?
Mostly I'm writing screenplays. I am working on a book. So I'm listening to you guys like, I actually have a friend who she told me about Barnes & Noble's self-publishing, where you upload it to their site and they print it off and sell it for you and they take a percentage. So that's all I knew about it. I haven't gotten a chance to research it, but so far I've just been doing screenplays and shooting them.
Screenplays are wonderful. Shooting them, I'm sure a lot of creativity came out of this global pandemic.
Oh yeah, definitely. And I just won the Houston Comedy Film Festival for one of the things. Well, it's like one of my first things I ever shot. So, which was just a year ago. I just got into film. So,
You have the Midas touch. Congratulations. I know how to pick them. I can see people. I'm like, you have that energy like, oh, it was no big deal. I won the film festival on my nose. I'm like, okay, but I'm telling you, and I don't mean to be wrong, but that's usually, you know, how I am. But there's an old lady right now mad at you. She don't even know you, but she's been trying to win that film festival since 1912. I'm trying to tell you what I know. And you're like, oh, I won my first project. You probably didn't even mean to submit it. Like, you probably was asleep, accidentally hit the submit button and just won.
No, I was excited. I mean, I am excited. I just found out on Friday and I'm like, I won, oh my goodness. And they showed it at like a drive-in theater. So that was enough for me. Then for them to tell me I won, I'm like, that's the first thing I ever shot, amazing. So I wrote that and I acted and directed. And it's actually called The Millennial Sketch Show, which I'm trying to shoot the rest of the episodes, but I think I heard Dana talking about millennial stuff. And I'm like, I make fun of them. So,
it's okay. So, we won't hold that against you.
Sorry.
No, I'm sorry. It's okay. We won't hold that against you.
Oh yeah. I'm definitely getting into book writing because I have so many ideas. I'm like, this needs to go on a book. I'm working on a children's book and then a book for women, again, making fun of relationship issues. In a funny, I want them to be confident way of like, everybody deals with that, get over it type of thing.
It sounds like it's going to be wonderful. It's going to be a lot of fun. If I were you, I'm not sure which platform your friend recommended. The one I always recommend is Amazon KDP. Amazon KDP. And I always tell people, if you do it all the way to the bank. Amazon KDP will take you to my favorite place, all the way to the bank. That's my line. Guys be like, Sharifa, I want to take you out. Where you want me to take you? I'm like, you got to take me to my favorite place. They like, what? I like Bank of America. I like Chase. I like Wells Fargo. Any of them. Where you want to go? I've had so much fun today. This has been an amazing, exciting show. We have talked, we have shared, we have learned, we have laughed, and I definitely appreciate all of you. What I love to do at the end of every show is just simply allow my guests the opportunity to speak directly to the audience, to everyone who is watching this show live, as well as everyone who is watching it in the archives. Doesn't matter when you watch it, you are still appreciated. We still need your support. Go ahead and share the show. But for our guests, what do you want our audience to take away from your appearance here today? And we're going to start with you, Dana.
Fantastic. Thank you. What I want our audience to take away is to take the time to invest in the magical millennials. We may see millennials as, you know, where they stand in age. And we also want to keep in mind that whatever we have created, if we share and empower this magical, they're the most awesome group of people, in my opinion. If we share what we have, we can empower them to exponentially just explode, regardless of COVID or anything else that might seem to take them down. They're a tough bunch, and let's get behind them and support them.
So basically, we can't laugh at them. We can't make little sketches about how
we can laugh at them. They're tough. They can handle it, but they're laughing at us and showing us what to do also.
It's like that meme. I don't know if you saw it. It's like, I need technical support by my resident IT Asian who's like 5 is sleep right now. Like they have all this technology and they grow up with it. Jahala, what do you have for us? We gonna laugh at the millennials or what?
I'm a millennial too. I'm laughing at myself. I guess my advice to everyone would just be to push everything to the limit, push yourself to the limit, push anything that you can to the limit, except for angry people. Don't push them. And just try everything and get professional at accepting those no's. Become a professional loser so that you can be the only winner that matters. That's my most important thing. And accept it. Acceptance is good. Once you accept it, you can move past it and leave it back there and just keep going. Because I'm somebody who's tried over and over and over, and it's starting to work out. And I feel like it's something that everybody can do.
Yes, positive. There are more millionaires made in a recession than any other point of time because of necessity. We need to grow. So thank you. Raquel, what do you have for us?
Wow, such great advice. I'm taking notes. So in my book, it's divided up into 3 sections: be worthy, be wise, and be whole. And I want to focus on the be whole part, because as an entrepreneur, just like you have to plug in your cell phone to, you know, get that battery going, you've got to plug in yourself, your soul, your being. We're in a pandemic. We have a recession happening. So many things are going on. And if you try to turn it on and go harder, that's the faster you're going to go into burnout mode. So self-care. Be kind to yourself, be gentle with yourself, meditate, pray, stay hydrated, eat well, be smart, spend time with loved ones, and then get back in the game when you're feeling up to it. Oftentimes we give ourselves too much, too fast, and it hurts the creative process, and we all need that creative process to thrive.
Yes, absolutely. I need that list. Just make a list, then laminate it, and then send it to me, because I need the drink plenty of water, get all of that list, is what we need to remember. Thank you. Wayne, have you enjoyed the show? You've been on here with some amazing, beautiful women. What do you want people to take away?
I've loved it. Well, the main thing I think is that, you know, my book's out there. Tales from the Day is a series of chapters of various vignettes of things, including a number of things that I encountered in business, such as the day my business was trashed by a worm. It's a long story. But
you gotta read the book.
The other book, it's Tales from the Day, available at Amazon, KDP, yes. And the other book, You're an Author, Don't Get Hustled, is a step-by-step process, like Raquel pointed out, of if you want to self-publish, the first question is, should you? So that's addressed. And then if you want to do it, there's a step-by-step process of how to do it, plus how to know when you're being hustled. And we priced the book at $7 because mainly I just was hoping to get it out there for authors so they don't have to go through what Raquel went through and what I went through. And it's like a checklist, which we all know how valuable that is. So that's You're an Author, Don't Get Hustled. Available, of course, on Amazon. And it tells you how to put your book out there and do all that stuff. So I love this. This was great.
I'm glad you enjoyed it. I'm enjoying watching you right now. Your background, your green screen is doing some very interesting things. You're invisible right now, Wayne. I don't like, where'd he go? This is cool.
I'll try and get rid of that.
It is cool. We get to see your smiling face. I just want to thank you all for being a guest on today's episode of the Roundtable Talk Show. It was a great show. I also want to thank everyone who tuned in to watch the show live and everyone who tuned in to watch it from the archives. I definitely appreciate your support. But again, don't just watch the show. Please go ahead and share the show. And if you are interested in more ways that I can help your business, or maybe you want to grab your tickets for my Powered by Purpose 2-day empowerment teleconference, which is October 9th and 10th, or maybe you just simply want to be a guest on the Roundtable Talk Show. Whatever it is, we can assist you at the website at asksharifah.com. Until tomorrow morning at 8 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, everyone have a safe and a blessed day. Bye now.
Great. Bye-bye.